kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Interesting show this episode. We're going to start things off. Cole Martin, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm confused. Let's get something. There's an elephant in the room. We got to get this out of the way. Uh-huh. We don't always record in order. That may shock a lot of people, but sometimes on this show, we'll record something on one day in anticipation of something happening the next day.
Mm-hmm. It's like Hollywood, but without all the pretty people.
Pretty much. Our Tuesday shows usually record on Mondays and Sundays and then release on Tuesday and all that fun stuff. This episode is releasing on Wednesday because mm-hmm. we had an interview scheduled for Tuesday, and then it got scheduled for Wednesday, and now it got rescheduled for the middle of March due to a game delay. So, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. The show will be out in a couple of hours. I would hope so. And, I think a couple of times through the episode, I mentioned that we had an interview. And, if you hear us mention that, we don't.
Shit happened. And that's the way it rolls.
Shit does happen. But since we had this, we actually could touch on a little bit of news that got announced just today on Wednesday. Xbox fans are going to have some RPGs to look forward to. Have you seen this shit?
I didn't. What happened?
First off, this morning, Dotemu announced that East Origins is hitting the Xbox One this spring.
I did see that announcement. I didn't realize that's an RPG. Like, I'm not familiar with that series at all. I don't know anything about it.
I am fucking thrilled. I love the East games. We covered East Origin. I believe we covered the PS4 release of it, I believe. And even back then, I was like, oh, man, I would love to see this come to Xbox One. Dotemu mm-hmm. published it, and they're friendly with Xbox. We've gotten stuff on there. Maybe it'll happen. Well, it's happening. Yay!
Yay!
I was fucking thrilled to see that. And then just not even 20 minutes ago from when we're recording this, I saw that Sega announced Shining Resonance Refrain, the new Shining title, is coming to Xbox One and Switch for the American release.
Wow.
I'm thrilled. Two RPGs in one day. So Sega is bringing an RPG over, and they're already bringing over... they're bringing Xbox Valkyrie Chronicles 4, which I'm pumped about. So we're going to have some RPG love from Sega. Dotemu's bringing East over. Now we just need Square Enix to get on board and, like, bring us Final Fantasy 12 and Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 and Nier Automata. And
I don't have a big history of playing RPGs, but the few I've played, I enjoyed. And so I don't understand why, like... I understand and I don't understand at the same time why this whole market of RPG skips Xbox, but anything that means more games of different genres coming to more gamers, that's mm-hmm. a plus, no matter what.
Definitely.
Like you could tell me they're bringing more walking sims and point and clicks to Xbox, and I'd be like, fuck yeah! So I can imagine... RPG fans are just really all over it.
more games in general is always good, but the fact that we're getting some RPGs and tactical RPGs, which is a genre that Xbox is, you know, very clearly lacking in.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Maybe this will pave the way to Atlas bringing some stuff over. Maybe this will lead to NIS America finally supporting Xbox or Idea Factory. Maybe this will happen. Monster Hunter World sold really well so far. Yeah. It's doing pretty solid on Xbox, being like the number one seller, bumping PUBG off of number one. So
that's a big deal.
There's a market. Japanese mm-hmm. games can sell on Xbox if you A, release it on Xbox, and B, it's a solid game. It'll sell. People will buy it. People will play it. So take a shot.
I think even in the current state of JRPGs in particular, there's so few of them that you can make a shitty one and put it on there, and we'd be like, fucking finally. We're so desperate.
Yeah, Quest 64 got ported over to Xbox. This game's terrible, but it's an RPG, so I'm gonna play it.
Yeah, because at this point, we're desperate for anything like that, because it's devoid on Xbox of JRPGs.
Yeah.
So,
and the funny thing is, like, so many people still look at the Xbox as, like, the dude bro shooter console.
Yeah.
Like, Activision's not partnered with Sony for fucking everything anymore with all their shooters. Like, PlayStation 4 is the Call of Duty console now, people. PS4 is the mm-hmm. dude bro area. Like, they still release it on Xbox, but PS4...
We don't get any love on Xbox.
They get the timed exclusives and all the other shit on PS4. Like, the roles have reversed, so now bring Persona 5 to Xbox One, please.
Yeah.
Or, you know what game would be really cool on Xbox, as I segue horribly to our pre-recorded content?
Do the segue. What would be good?
I would love to see our first game to talk about tonight, Secret of Mana, developed and published by Square Enix, released February 15th on PS4, Vita, and Steam for $39.99. The memorable adventures of Randy, Prim, and Popoy is reborn as Secret of Mana, originally released in 1993. Secret of Mana is by far the most popular title in the Mana series and has now undergone a much-awaited full 3D remake. Quick thing, it's the most popular Mana title because it's pretty much the only good one that was released in America. Like, they had a couple other ones on the PlayStation 1 and some remakes that are okay, but, you know, Secret of Mana was legendary, and everyone thinks the best Mana game would have been Secret of Mana 2 or Seiken Densetsu 3 that never came to America. Mm. So, instead, we're going to talk about Secret of Mana, the HD remake on PS4. If you have ever played Secret of Mana before, you know exactly what you're getting into. This pretty much feels like the original Super Nintendo game, Secret of Mana, with 3D visuals on it. There are some updates to combat. The most divisive thing is that instead of combat taking place in 4 directions, it now takes place in 8 directions, which is fucking up a lot of people, because they're so used to attacks being either up, down, left, or right, and now they have to account for diagonals. You know, we have analog sticks, so of course that happens now. I just find it very imprecise a lot of times. Like, I do an attack, I swing my sword, and I, you know, the swipe goes through the enemy, but it doesn't register a hit, and it's just, I don't know. I don't know why I'm missing attacks. If you've never played Secret of Mana, you should probably explain this. It is an action adventure, pseudo RPG of a boy in a village who uncovers a special sword trying to get back to his village after he fell down a waterfall. And when he pulls the sword and goes back to his village, it unleashes monsters upon the world. And it is his job to, right the wrongs of his journey home, I guess. He ends up meeting companions on the way, traveling from here and there. It's very well known what Secret of Mana is. If you've never played it, what the fuck are you waiting for? Seriously. The big thing,
I'm waiting for it to come to Xbox because I've never played it.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I hate to interrupt you, but I kind of had to throw that out there.
Yeah, I'd love to see it hit Xbox as well, but I don't think it's going to happen. Yeah, this one's on PS4, Vita, Steam. The original Secret of Mana you could get if you pick up an SNES Classic. And I'll lead things off by saying you might want to look into an SNES Classic. I've had my reservations about this game kind of since it was first announced. I wasn't a huge fan of the visual style with it. First impressions when I saw screenshots, I'm like, wow, this looks like a mobile game. And they're trying to make it a PS4 release. The visual, the 3D upgrade just never really did it for me. In motion, it is a lot better than I thought it was going to be. The game looks good. It's bright. It's colorful. I'm still not a fan of some of the character redesigns and the translation to 3D. Something I did enjoy, a nice little SNES throwback, is each of the areas has a little mini map, and the mini map is actually the tiles from the Super Nintendo, which is I thought that was really cool. I'm like, oh, hey, it is still there. Because, you know, for the most part, it is the same game. It's, you know, the same game I've been playing for, oh my God, 26 years, 25 years. Holy shit. Secret Man is 25 years old. Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
Old enough to have liquor.
Like, this is just hitting me, like, as we're doing this, oh my God, Secret Man is 25 years old. Oh my back hurts just thinking about this.
You feel like you lost a little bit off your hairline there.
No, it's already gone. the HD reimagining of the game, fairly faithful gameplay wise. With that, it does lead to a couple of the annoyances from the Super Nintendo version of the game. Combat in this game comes down to a percentage gauge. And when you attack when it's 100%, you get a full strength attack. If you attack when it's at like 96%, you deal about maybe a fifth of the damage that you normally would.
Oh, geez.
Like, you always pretty much have to wait until it gets to 100% to do attacks, which, you know, on the Super Nintendo days, we just kind of got used to it. Nowadays, you know, action RPGs are so much about kind of button mashing or like creating combos and whatnot, that doing an attack and then walking around for 3 seconds as the gauge rebuilds and then doing an attack, waiting for the gauge to rebuild, it didn't age as well. I was hoping that was something that they would address with this remake. If you grew up with it, you're probably used to it. New gamers are going to be like, why can't I just attack this guy with my sword over and over? Like, why do I have to sit here and wait? I have a bow and arrow. Can't I just shoot the fucker a bunch of times instead of waiting and waiting? As you power up your weapons through the game, you unlock orbs that allow you to strengthen the weapons. As you make them more powerful, you can actually level up your weapon skill. Not only do your characters level up in the game like an RPG, your weapon skill levels up. And as that grows, when your attack hits 100%, if you're holding down the attack button, you'll start charging up a more powerful attack. One bar fills up, and depending on your level, it could fill up numerous times to be an even more powerful, special, devastating attack. You know, early in the game, it's not going to do a super amount of damage because you're only a level one sword that can, you know, has one bar of charge. But, you know, near the end of the game, you start beating motherfuckers down. Oh, man. Some of the other little just annoyances that didn't seem to be addressed from the Super Nintendo game is when enemies get hit. In most games, an enemy gets hit, you see damage pop up, and then you hit them again, and, you know, damage pops up. In this one, enemies seem like they're stunned for a couple of seconds. Like, you'll do an attack, and your bar will fill up, and the enemy will still be down, so you'll attack him again, and then there will be, like, a second or two delay until the hit registers, and the numbers will pop up. It's, again, this is something that growing up playing on the Super Nintendo, I expect from the game. I know that that's how the game works. Newcomers to this are going to be confused of, like, I just hit this guy 6 times in a row. Why did he only bounce twice and only 2 of my damage has shown up? Oh, there he goes again. Oh, there he goes again. Like, you won't be touching him and the hits will just keep registering. It's this is
that stuff. Seems like something that could have been fixed given hardware upgrades over the years.
I think it might have been something that it would have required too much work going into the code and reprogramming. I don't know how the game, you know, I'm not a programmer, obviously, but it is one of those things that, you know, the back of the box mentions upgraded for modern era. I thought these were going to be some of the touches that they would do to more, you know, modernize it a bit.
But now you can get attacked from 8 sides.
Yeah, you will. Sometimes you will. I feel bad doing this. One more a little annoyance is even something of, you know, when you would go talk to a shopkeeper or an innkeeper, when you're by yourself, you'll just talk to the guy. When you have one or two of the followers with you, you'll go up, you'll hit the button. All of your characters have to regroup in front of him and then spread out. And it, like, why can't I just talk to you? And again, this is another one of those things that if you played on the Super Nintendo, you know what's there. newcomers to the series are going to be like, why, why can't I just talk to this guy? And then let's go. One more annoyance. Again, dating back to the Super Nintendo, your companion AI was never the greatest. They would get caught on everything. If there's a bush and you don't guide them down and around, they'll just try walking through the bush and they'll just get caught. And that hasn't been addressed in this version of the game. Again, one of those things, Super Nintendo players are going to be like, oh, hey, it's this shit again. New gamers are going to be like, why? Just fucking follow me.
Yeah, I think even if you remember it being that way, finally, you would still probably be like, why didn't they just fix that?
Yeah.
If you're going to go through the hassle of remaking it, it just seems like odd quirks that should have been fixed in a remaster.
Yeah. I honestly think it's one of those things where they took the original game and just kind of slapped new visuals on it. Obviously, there are some additions to the game, some good stuff in the game. The game's pretty much fully voice acted. A lot of the voice acting is pretty solid as well. There's a couple of characters that are like, please don't talk again. But for the most part, I didn't have a problem with the voice acting. The soundtrack has gotten fully remastered as well. The general consensus seems to be hit and miss. Some of the songs I thought were incredible. Other songs, they just do weird, like, ambient noises in the background or, like, weird dual tracks. It's just a very hit or miss remaster. Thankfully, they do have the original or a slightly revamped original soundtrack in the game if you don't want to listen to the new one. So, you know, the best of both worlds, I guess. And then they actually added some more character development. When you stay at inns, you'll have brand new cutscenes. When you know, they have fully animated cutscenes. They did a really good job adding more to the game to just immerse you more in the world.
Yeah.
Sadly, it doesn't really, you know, get over all those gripes. If you've played Secret of Mana before, I think you're going to be slightly disappointed with this. At its core, it is still Secret of Mana, so it is still worth playing no matter what you do, because Secret of Mana is just a fucking awesome game. I just don't think this is the best way to play it. In my opinion, if you can't, you know, get on the virtual console somewhere, Super Nintendo Classic for $80 has it and 20 other games, where with this you're paying $40 for what a lot of people think is a lesser version of Secret of Mana. I think if they would have addressed some of those old issues that people had with the game, this would have easily gone to a definite buy it. Even with, you know, the visual style being, you know, personal choice, I still don't think it's the greatest. I still think it kind of looks like a mobile game, but it's not as bad as I thought it would be. So I'm somewhat of a believer there. The soundtrack improvements, just there's so much good to the game, but there's just not enough updating the stuff that needed to be updated.
Yeah.
But overall, $40, I still got to give it a try. It is still Secret of Mana, and you can't go wrong with Secret of Mana, and at least in my eyes. So if you've never played it before and you only have a PS4 or a Vita or Steam, you have no intentions of picking up anything Nintendo related, give it a shot. It's enjoyable. It's just not the best version of the game, in my opinion. So,
makes sense.
All right. Next game is called FE. Just FE. Developed by Zoink Games, published by EA. Wait, we're covering an EA game? What the fuck? So, shout out to Zoink for that one. Released February 16th on Xbox One, Switch, PC on Origin, not on Steam, PS4, $19.99. Fae is a personal narrative about our relationship with nature, the land, and its beings. It is a wordless celebration of our longing to be one with the world around us. It's a game full of discovery, conflict, and relationships. Can you hear the forest speak? Oh, tell me about this one.
I have never, for a review, crammed so many genre words into a simple sentence to try to explain a game. I'm going to throw out to start off with that this is, I would call it an exploratory platformer to start with, but there's Metroidvania type gameplay in that you unlock abilities that you want to come back to other areas to explore them further. It's incredibly beautiful. It's very atmospheric, but it breaks literally every kind of genre. Like, it does not fit into just one box. And I think that's kind of the glory of I'm going to try to pronounce it Fe. I've been calling it Fee, but I'm pretty sure I'm wrong. But I think that's the glory of the game as a whole. Like, it's not boring because you're not stuck in any kind of endless loop of gameplay. It just constantly switches things up and throws you around. You are in a absolutely stunning world that is kind of for like a forest. There's also waterfalls and marshes. There's a ton of different areas throughout this world that you'll get to explore. And you'll notice some wildlife in each biome. That's probably a good way to explain it. They're biomes. And you'll notice they look fairly similar to what we see in our world, but they're a little different. So like you may see a deer, but doesn't quite have eyes and a mouth. It's just got like a glowing orb thing in its face.
It's a Satan deer.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it looks incredibly adorable until you get really close and realize that it's kind of cyclopsy mouth face thing. you're never really sure what to make of the animals. From a distance, they're stunning. But you do have to get close to them because as Faye, you have to communicate with the animals in order to move around the world. So each animal has its own language. And Faye, as a baby, he can only speak to the other babies of the animals. Unless he learns their language by helping them out, in which point he can then communicate with the adults of that species as well. So, There's a little bit of puzzling involved when it comes to helping the animals in the worlds and learning their languages so that you can continue on. There's not really anything in the way of combat, but there's a lot of stealth, surprisingly enough.
Interesting.
And that there are enemies in this world, and they are known as the Silent, and they're very non-organic. They're almost kind of like mechs. And again, they're faceless, but they've got the glowing orb doohickey thing. It's more like an industrial light for them, though, as opposed to like an inner light. Because they are more of a mech that moves around the world, and they're very anti-Fae. They want Fae and all the animals to be just as silent as they are. If they do spot you, they will come chasing after you on all fours, kind of creepy crawling at you. And they shoot a web that's kind of like a black ooze. And if they hear any animals or they hear you, they will contain you in that web and then do nefarious things.
Nefarious is always good.
Yeah, it's incredibly heartbreaking. It's the funny thing. Even though, like, there's no dialogue or anything, you find yourself getting kind of attached to the animals that Faye connects to. And in order to connect, you have to sing a song with them in the same kind of pitch or tone. I'm not musically inclined, so I don't recognize what the actual proper term there is. But in order to do this, you'll get close to them, and then you pull the trigger to sing. And Faye and the animal that you are trying to communicate with, like two or three little wavelengths will come up between them. And you have to adjust how much pressure you're putting on the right trigger. And then if you're getting it right, the lines will go straight and light orbs will come between Faye and the animal you're communicating with. And when they meet in the middle, that's when you've communicated and connected with them. And at that point, then the animal will actually follow you around and help you. Each animal is coordinated to a color and a symbol, as well as a sound. So if you see something in the world that has that matching symbol or that matching color, the animal can react with that. In the very beginning, this is used with giant lilies, and a deer can make a sound at the lilies and they will propel you upward. So you need to use the deer to launch you into new areas.
Bark.
Yeah.
Bark.
Bark. So you
see, it's the animals. You know, they know.
They're communicating.
So how is the game overall? We know it is a gorgeous looking game. How well does it play?
It actually plays incredibly well. I never had any problems with the controls. I felt that it was really intuitive on its own just to walk up and press the trigger and see what happened. But even aside from that, it does come up with little prompts on the screen to tell you, you know, you need to, if you're taking a particularly long time trying to communicate, it will straight up just like display the right trigger and the icon gets smaller as you need to put more pressure on it, and it will get larger if you need to let off of it. So if you're really struggling, it will come up and even straight up show you, this is where you're fucking up, do this right.
Listen, idiot.
Yeah. One of the other things too is that you're kind of meant to feel like you're lost in this great big world. And Faye is fairly tiny, and his only means of defense is to hide in a spiky little bush that looks like him. So, you know, when the Silent are coming, you can't have any kind of combat or anything. You're just kind of meant to feel like you're against the whole world here. And yet, despite that, the game is incredibly assistive. Is that even a word? Like, it goes out of its way to help you.
Well, I guess assistive is a word now.
It's a word today. I've made it one. I'm Shakespeare. That wasn't the word I was going for, and then it fell out anyway, so whatever. It'll help you. It goes out of its way to try to help you, even with you feeling lost. There's a map. You can put waypoints. It will show you points of interest. And in addition to that, once you unlock the bird language, you can just hold the right trigger down as hard as you can, and it will call for the birds. And if you howl at them a second time, just real quick after you've called them to you, they will go zipping across the map and leave a pink trail right behind them, and they will hover over and circle things that you need to be moving toward and everything. It's incredibly helpful. Like, I never truly felt like I couldn't get out of any one situation or another or figure out where I was supposed to be going next. There are some instances, though, where the platforming can get a little difficult. Just I was shocked by how hard it was. There's one moment that really, really stands out, where there is like this giant deer creature that is being chained up by the silence. And once you free it from the chains, you have to actually climb up the trees. One of the abilities you unlock very quickly is to jump from tree to tree, and you look very much like a squirrel while doing it. So if you can imagine a squirrel leaping up a tree, that's how you move up the trees in this game. Nice. Once you get to the top of a tree, you can leap from one to the next. This deer is covered in these trees, and you have to leap from one to the next, to the next, to the next, in order to actually get to the top. But at the same time, the deer is walking in a big honking circle. And so if you don't time that jump properly, you're going to fall to the bottom.
Nice.
All the way, way down. And then guess what you get to do? You either get to chase the deer around like a dumbass, or you can sit in a tree and wait for it to come back to you. Guess who did both?
Wild guess. Going to go with you.
The thing that was kind of frustrating is, like, even though I would make these leaps and I'd be absolutely convinced, I've done it, I've made it, I'm going to go, it's going to work, hit the button, fall to the floor. when you're doing these platforming leaps, if you're not a total jackass like me, you can look at the tree that you're going to jump toward, and it will highlight it in white, and that actually tells you if you're going to make the jump or not.
Nice.
And yet I still fell a whole lot, because it is just shockingly difficult. But you can ease the burden of, like, these kind of platforming things. There's gems hidden around the world, and if you're really, really interested, you can beat the whole game without fucking off and finding any of those gems.
Nice.
But if you do, it changes things dramatically, because you unlock extra abilities. Like, one of the first ones that you get, for example, is the ability to glide. And if you're going to fall really, really far, you can kind of save yourself a little if you can glide to a tree that's closer to where you need to be instead of falling all the way to the floor.
Nice.
Yeah, so it adds to, you know, the urge to go back and explore and find more things if you want to go seek out those gems after you unlock the ability to get to them.
You want to seek gems and enlightenment.
Yeah, you know, the little purple glowy things, and they just tell you a little, you know, help you out a little and let you find out more about the world. Again, there's no dialogue or anything, so I hesitate to call it a narrative in any way, but there's an obvious overtone of, like, being alone and connecting with nature and the world around you and learning how to maneuver in it. So
nice.
Even without a single word, there's a really heartwarming story.
Cool. So for $20, what are your thoughts on Fee-fi-fo?
This is only $20.
Yep. $20.
It's a definite buy it. It's a really good story. It's actually a lot of gameplay, and you'll definitely get your money's worth.
Awesome. Sounds good. Next game is called Monster Energy Supercross, the official video game developed and published by Milestone, distributed by Square Enix once again. Released February 13th, Xbox One and PS4 for $59.99, Steam for $49.99. Live the adrenaline and the excitement of the 2017 Monster Energy Supercross Championship with, surprise, Monster Energy Supercross, the official video game. We've covered Milestone's motocross games in the past. I think MXGP3 was the last one that we checked out on the show. The first thing I will say is that this game, compared to previous games, is gorgeous. The whole 4K, it's just stunning looking. The dirt looks great when it kicks up, the rain effects, mud effects. Even when, like, your bike goes off a jump, you could see the rider's jersey, like, rippling in the breeze. I just noticed that today while playing it. I'm like, wow, is that his fucking shirt just flapping in the, that's really cool. stunning looking game. It looks great. Plays frustrating-ish. The first time I played this, I streamed it on Twitch, and it was not a good experience. I was raging pretty hard. For the longest time, I wanted to say that the physics were what was weird, but I've come to the realization it's not the physics, it is the collision. It just, when you're going into a turn at the start of a race with 21 other racers, it is a full-on clusterfuck. You're going to run into things, you're going to get knocked over, you're going to wipe out, it's not going to be your fault. And then you go off the first jump on a stage. And then you land on a bunch of other riders, and you don't, like, knock them off their bikes. You just float on them. You just hover on top of other riders. Like, I've saved a couple of clips on Xbox, but I don't understand some of the collision in the game. It blows my mind that I'll go off a jump. I'll land on nothing, but I'll just hover in the air for a little bit, and then I'll realize that I was kind of on top of someone else, but instead of landing, I just float. It is weird.
It's weird.
they also have little barriers along the sides of the track, you know, so riders know where to go. Those are another collision nightmare. I've already had, going into a turn, I would roll up onto one of them, and then while trying to get off it, I clipped, like, vertically facing down into the ground.
Nice.
Front tire deep in the ground. Like, I I don't understand a lot of the collision in the game, and it really, really hampered my enjoyment for the first couple of days I played it. The more I played it, the more I got a hang of the actual physics of the game and the riding of the game. And, you know, overall, it is still a solid motorcycle, motocross game. But the collision, the weirdness of the game, like, you watched me stream it. You saw times that this shit would happen. And I don't know how to properly describe it without it sounding weird. It went
pretty quickly. That's a good way to describe it. Like, you would just barely touch anything on the borders and everything would shit the bed.
Because I don't remember this in MXGP3. I don't remember ever having this issue of, you know, obviously at the beginning of races, it's going to be tight. It's going to be crowded. I don't remember the aggravation of having to restart a race a dozen times because the first turn was just a lost cause. And if you get fucked up in that first turn, you might as well just throw it in because you're going to be stuck with the pack the rest of the race and they're going to be knocking you around. AI drivers in this game are dickheads. I've been run off the course multiple times when I'm in a pack. Even when I'm like one-on-one with a guy, I've been, you know, they'll clip my back tire and just knock me over. I'm like, you son of a bitch. I've lost races because of that shit. So AI drivers blow me.
I know when I was watching you, I was kind of like, boy, these races are really long. They're just going on forever. And then I realized it was because you were having to restart over and over. And I was just like,
I feel dumb. There was a lot of resetting. In terms of race length, I enjoy the fact that this isn't strictly lap-based I've been doing a lot of the career mode. With that, for the race length, you could choose short, normal, or long, whatever it is. And instead of being like, oh, well, this one has 5 laps, this one has 7 laps. It's like this one, you race for 5 minutes and then you have a final lap. Or this one, you race for 10 minutes and then it's a final lap. So it's, I enjoy that, you know, the size of the track doesn't really impact how long you play. So you're not like loading up a race and then only going for like 3 minutes and then you got to go back to loading screen. So you could actually have solid length races and not have to worry about, oh, what lap am I on? It's just like, how much time is left? Am I doing okay? Okay, there's 30 seconds left. So when the timer runs out, it's going to say 2 laps remaining. And when I cross, you know, the finish line area, it's going to be final lap. So I got one more lap. I got to get back into first place. I got to make sure that son of a bitch doesn't run me off the road again.
Watch your tires.
Yeah, pretty much. Content-wise, a lot of stuff in the game. A bunch of tracks. I want to say close to 20 different tracks in the game, all based on real locations that the Monster Energy Supercross is going to be on. The stadiums look great. Just the arena, the lighting. Again, the game looks really, really good. It's a gorgeous-looking game. They have the career mode. They have a championship mode. They have single-event races. They have online races. They have create your own course. You could share courses online. You could download courses and fuck around on those, on time attacks, everything else. Even like career progression comes down to different things that you do in races. Like if you take a big jump, you'll earn experience points or RP based on like the length of your jump, how long you're in the air, how good of a jump it is. If you land a good jump, you get a point bonus. If you land a perfect jump, you get a bigger bonus. Drifting, doing clean laps. So you're always earning experience in the game just by racing and just by doing stuff. One thing I did want to bring up, just because a lot of people enjoy achievements on this show, this appears to be a really, really easy completion. Like, the game was out only a few days and there were already over a dozen people with 1,000.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So it seems to be a fairly easy one if you're into quick and easy achievements. I mean, it's not going to be super fast because there are some grindy ones in there, like earn 10 million credits. Although the credit multiplier DLC will obviously help on that if you want to drop another $4 or $5, whatever it is. Or if you get the season pass, it includes all that and then more tracks and shit down the line. Overall, though, $60, I don't think it's as good as MX3. I think the weirdness with the collision is going to turn some people off. It nearly turned me off completely that first day, because after I streamed it, I was ready to never touch it again. And then I'm like, I can't, you know, my job is to review the game, so I have to be more fair to it. I have to put more than 2 hours into it. And I spent most of today playing it, most of yesterday playing it, and it's really fun. It's really enjoyable, but just the weirdness of the collision, I don't know. It makes it tough to really get into it. For $60, I might wait for a sale. If you're big into the motocross games, you know, give it a try it rating. See if your Redbox has it. Give it a shot. If you could get past the weirdness of the collision, or if you don't think it's weird and I'm just fucked up in the head, then yeah, go for it. Cause it's solid looking game. It looks beautiful. I can't get over how good it looks. It really does.
Yeah.
Except.
I was waiting for this. I was wondering.
I don't know what Milestone did with their character models in the game, but these are some of the ugliest sons of bitches I've ever seen in a game. They're like,
did you ever find out if there's females too?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, see.
But they're like mutant bug-eyed free. They are ugly. They are ugly faces in the game. It is such a great looking game with environments and with settings and with effects and everything else, and then they take their helmets off and you're like, put them back on. Just go back to racing. Don't, your mama should have just punched you as a kid. Maybe she did. Maybe that's why you're that ugly, because she punched you as a kid. But yeah, Milestone, please get new faces. I don't know, they're ugly. They're so goddamn ugly.
Somebody's losing their job for that one.
Oh man. But yeah, again, it's solid, just the weirdness. That's it. Anyway, one more game. The Station, developed and published by The Station, released February 20th on Xbox One, PC, and PS4 for $14.99. The Station is a first-person sci-fi mystery set on a space station. Oh hey, The Station. Sent to study a sentient alien civilization. Assuming the role of a recon specialist, players must unravel a mystery which will decide the fate of two civilizations. Cole, tell me about this one.
So, this is basically what we refer to on here as a walk-sploration. It's not gonna break any genre barriers. It is a gorgeous game. But you have your typical on a space station floating in space, looking around trying to figure out what the fuck happened. Not anything we haven't really seen before, but the story does have a really cool twist ending. If you're paying attention.
Spoil the ending on the show.
No.
That'd be so dickish. But oh, I wonder what they think of the game. Oh, you assholes.
There is a really cool twist in there. But if you're paying attention to, like, the details as you're working along, I figured out within about 10 or 15 minutes where this shit was going to go. And I was right. I think maybe I've watched too many horror movies and it takes a little more to surprise me with an ending these days or something.
Nice.
But, yeah, it was a little predictable. The environments are really cool. Most of the story is played out through audio logs that you'll find on the station. No kidding. You'll find these audio logs. These are fully voice acted, and the voice acting is surprisingly really good. Some of the writing is a little stiff. And it will make sense why when you play, but some of it you're just kind of like, ew, that was really weirdly worded. But the acting, they pull it off, even with it being a little odd and kind of obtuse is a good way to describe some of the writing. It's a narrative thing. There are some puzzles. They're not anything that's going to shock your world. And it is a short campaign. Even with the puzzles, you can probably pull it off in about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
If you're using a guide to get through this, there are full walkthrough guides for 23 minutes.
Good Lord. Then again, if you're watching a, if you're using a guide to get through the game, you're playing it wrong.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can get through this really quickly. I recommend exploring it and looking around. That's the whole point of this kind of game. And so I understand why people just blow through them stupid quick, you know, get the gamer score and be gone. But the glory in this is trying to figure out, you know, is this the twist that's coming up that I'm expecting, or is it going to be something different? Because there's a lot of clues, but there's also stuff that will try to throw you off that path. So it's not in your face, this is what's going to happen at the end. Which is nice. And like I said, I figured it out really quickly, but that's kind of me just being a dick, and I play a lot of these games, so I know what's going to happen. It takes a little more to surprise me. But it's, you know, it was still an enjoyable ending, and I still didn't see it going quite the way it did. There were some things that threw me off. I, like you said, this story is basically about, I'm trying to word it so I don't give it away on accident. An alien planet has been discovered, and the crew aboard the station are trying to study this alien civilization from afar because they're at civil war. And so they don't want to be like, surprise, we found you, we're aliens. And then, like, find out that the aliens are maybe kind of violent, or hostile toward them as well as each other.
Nice.
So it's really neat to uncover, like, some of the crew thinks maybe we should make contact anyway, even though it's not our mission. We're here. We kind of owe it to be like, yo, we're in the solar system too. Whereas some of the others are like, no, just stick to the mission. So it's neat to see how this plays back and forth and how it turns out for them. What ultimately happens, you know, do they make contact or do they stick with the mission, or, you know, does it go well for them? Why have you been sent here to the station to check up on them and everything? It's really well done, even if it is a little on the predictable side. So
predictable for you, at least.
Predictable for me. And like I said, I play a lot of this. Like, it takes a lot to really just make me go, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. So, $15 on this one. What do you think?
This is a really solid try. I think, given how short it is, even if you're playing without a guide, like I said, maybe an hour and a half if you're slugging it. It's really kind of short for the price. But it's a really good story, so I can kind of I forgive it for being short, just because it's sweet and to the point.
Yeah.
I did have one big major problem that I need to address, though. I played this game some time ago when we first got our review codes for it, and then I tried to play it a couple of other times after. I didn't finish it that in that setting, but I was near the end, and I would load the game up, and while it was loading, it has the very first load scene takes quite a while. So I'd go do something else while it was loading, like go get a snack or whatever. I'd come back and my Xbox would be off.
Weird.
And I'd think, okay, I've had problems with my power brick, so maybe it's overheating. I even set up the power brick with like a fan on it and everything, just trying to figure out what was going on. But I was playing other games fine.
Weird.
And today it got really bad, like 7 times it shut down the whole system on me.
Oh, wow.
So I finally gave up, and I thought, I even said to my husband, I said, well, it's a good thing we're getting taxes in 2 days, because I think the Xbox is dead.
Oh, Lord.
And that's a problem, because I have a fuse. And so then I got it to turn on, and it stayed on because I stayed on the dashboard and didn't try to load a game. So then I loaded a different game, and I left it on for 2 hours, and it was fine.
Huh.
And then I loaded the station, and it shut down.
Oh, God. Have you seen anything online with other people having issues like that?
I did not. But I did uninstall the game and reinstalled it. And then it was fine. But I had lost my save. So I don't know if the save file was corrupted.
Possible. Something could have, something fucked up could have happened.
Killing everything when it did it. So, I mean, it was straight up power cycling the Xbox over it. Wow. So once I uninstalled it, it was fine. And I reinstalled it and it reinstalled fine. And I was able to finish out, but I did have to start all over because it killed my save file.
Fun.
But I just, holy fuck balls. It's been a nightmare just trying to, I don't know what made it do it, but.
Nice. Well, hopefully none of the other stuff that you'll be covering for next episode will give you any shit.
Please don't crash my Xbox with your game. I live in the middle of nowhere, and this is my only source of social contact and entertainment.
I want to find the glitchiest games for you now. Well, Cole, thank you so much. What was that?
I said I felt horrible because I'm like, man, I don't want this to negatively impact the review, but if I don't get to finish it, it's not going to go well. But I did get to finish it, and I don't know if it was a game or if it was me or what, but something fucked up, but I still say try it because it's a good story.
Sounds good. Well, again, thank you so much for joining, as always, in chatting games. Any final thoughts to sum up your games or no, mine, if you want?
Please don't crash my Xbox.
So don't crash Xboxes and Milestone get better faces.
Yeah. And females.
All right. Next game to talk about is a preview of Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire, developed by Obsidian Entertainment, published by Obsidian and Versus Evil. It's releasing April 3rd on Steam for $49.99. Pursue a rogue god over land and sea in the sequel to the multi-award winning RPG Pillars of Eternity. Captain your ship on a dangerous voyage of discovery across the vast unexplored archipelago, I hate that word, region of the Deadfire. Judging by the laughter, you could hear Royal Sefton's here to talk about this one. Royal, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, and I have to agree that I hate that word, too.
Archipelago.
Always makes me think of Metal Gear Solid. The Fox Archipelago.
Oh, what a word. What a friggin' word. So, Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire. The original Pillars of Eternity, set the world on fire. Everyone loved it. Came to console. Everyone still loved it. How's the sequel shaping up so far?
So far, so good, man.
Cool. Next game to talk now.
Yes! Let's move right on. No. It's a good game. I mean, it's a preview. It's not complete, and it actually drops you in the middle of it. So you go through the lengthy character creation process, and you know how detailed it was in the first game. Expect more of the same. And then, boom, you're on the docks. You've already made land at some island, and you have a party of mercenaries, all with the name mercenary in it, like fighter mercenary or something, or mage mercenary. Yeah, very generic. You have this party already pre-assembled for you, and you're already level 6. And you go through your character sheet and you level up one by one until you have finished allocating all the extra perks and bennies, and go through the skill tree. So you kind of get dropped in the middle of it. But it's shaping up so far to play, very similarly to the one before it. If that was your cup of tea, I think this is going to be, and it's a good thing, of course, more of the same. I just wish I had a better understanding of where I was when I got there and what I'm doing there. And it doesn't seem like there's a lot of explanation yet in the preview.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's one of the perks and downfalls of a preview build is they kind of want to hide the story so that we're not spoiling anything. We just need to take a look at the mechanics and how well it's shaping up and if it's playing well. Clearly they don't want to leak out any kind of story content because the wrong person gets that info and it's ruined for everyone.
That's a true statement.
Yeah. So tell us all the story stuff.
Exactly. I did find a quest almost immediately when I walked into this coastal town, and we're received warmly as though we're somehow going to save this village. And once you leave the village, you actually kind of go to an overworld map of the island, and you can click about and explore. Remind me of a lot when I was playing Fallout 2, the old isometric Fallouts.
You have that overworld map, and then you zoom into an area for combat, or maybe you find an item out there or something. But the gameplay, it's pretty much what you might expect if you've already played the first Pillars of Eternity. Not to just personal opinion, not necessarily my cup of tea. I'm very much a turn-based player, and with Pillars of Eternity, you instead have that real time with the ability to pause sort of combat, the more Baldur's Gate sort of thing, mm-hmm. which I've never been as good at. I get nervous trying to play that. Instead, I'm like, I've got to know exactly which hex they're standing on. I've got to rotate them and position them, and I've got to have them attack.
This,
you know,
is
the
too
way
much pressure.
Yeah.
Wait, why the fuck did I ask you to cover this?
I only like Twitch games, man. Why are you having me do this shit? No, it is an awesome game. It's visually great. It is quite playable. You know, I got over my schism about having to control things, and I found that, you know, the party that you start out with is pretty well balanced. So I had all the necessary heals when I started to see my health get low. So I wouldn't say it played itself, you know, but I played it a low enough difficulty level that I could see that they were able to competently, you know, keep me going when I started to travel the island a bit more.
Nice. Visually, how's the game shaping up so far? Because the screenshots I've seen, it looks fucking good.
It's pretty. Yeah, it's a very pretty game. Renders real well. It takes a long time to load, which is, again, probably preview beta build stuff. I tested both on Windows and on Linux just out of curiosity, because Pillars of Eternity was cross-platform from day one, if I recall correctly, and sure enough, here too. You know, and in both cases, there were some weird lag times when going to load, and sometimes I couldn't get to exit without having to hard crash it, both platforms. But once it's running, it is a beautiful game. It's really good looking and well rendered. And I don't have a real high end system. I have a GeForce GTX 1050, I want to say.
Those words mean nothing to me.
Well, think cheap enough card that it hasn't been, it isn't getting used by, well, that probably means, yeah, I was going to say it's not really a good mining card either, so.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that means.
It's a budget card. It's a budget card. I'll leave it at that, man.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
So, yeah, but it's a really pretty game. Definitely, I think, going to be a must-buy for anybody who played the first one, and for anybody who's looking for more of that, you know, quasi-real-time RPG, isometric RPG experience. It hits all the high notes. It's all there.
Nice. Let's go over the purchase options, because we're a little over a month away. We're about 5 weeks away from the launch, April 3rd. There are three versions up for pre-purchase on Steam right now. The standard edition's $49.99. It comes with a couple of little bonuses for the standard version. They have Beakhead the Hawk as an in-game pet. St. Draga's Skull, which looks to be a pretty neat-looking weapon with a fucking green flaming skull on the top of it. And then a black flag that you can have as well. Then they have a deluxe edition. That one clocks in at $59.99. So an extra $10, it gets you the game, a soundtrack download, an in-game pet, a special in-game item, digital pen and paper starter guide, a digital high-res map, and a digital guidebook for it. And then they have the Obsidian edition for $74.99. Which includes everything I already mentioned, as well as three DLC content expansions, which I'm sure will be named at a later date.
Right. So season pass, kind of.
Pretty much. It just says here, DLC content packs of numbers 1 through 3, robust content expansions to the base game that will add new areas, new experience, new items, and expand the world of Pillars of Eternity to Deadfire. Post-launch content, a $30 value. So, I'm curious to know, the three different editions, $50 for standard, $60 for deluxe, $75 for the Obsidian edition, what do you think of the options?
Well, I think that if you pay for the $75 version, you're getting Cosmo the Space Pig, and that right there is a must-buy. I can't make this shit up, man. It exists. Cosmo the Space Pig.
It does. It wouldn't be Pillars of Eternity without Cosmo. Cosmo accompanies your party, floating on cyan gossamer, inspiring you through a combination of unflappable courage and incredible cuteness.
It exists.
Oh, and that technically, that one comes in the deluxe edition as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The Obsidian Edition, getting $30 of DLC for free. I mean, we already know Pillars of Eternity, the original game, was great. We know that. That is a fact. The original Pillars is fantastic. Second one, from what you're telling me, is shaping up to be just as fantastic, if not better. So yes. if you're into Pillars of Eternity, it seems like dropping the $75 on the Obsidian might be worth it if you're already a fan.
Yeah, and I mean, if you plan on buying the DLC anyway, it's still cheaper than buying them individually. They claim $30 value for those packs 1 through 3, and it's a less than $30 difference, right? Yeah. So, yeah. Well,
that plus seems you're like getting soundtrack and Cosmo the Space Pig.
I'm sorry, that kills me, man.
It's so awesome. I hope Cosmo comes to the console version, because I'm pretty sure it's hitting consoles later on this year or next year or something like that. I'm sure the first one hit. It'll happen. Whatever. Yeah. Either way, I'm guessing this is something we should keep an eye out on, right?
Yes, I would agree completely. I think it's going to be a real hit, and you know, I guess that should seem obvious, but what I'm saying is the good news is in trying out the preview, I'm excited for it.
Nice.
You know?
Well, hopefully in a little over a month, we'll be able to talk about it some more on the show.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Cool. But you got one more game to talk about, and that is called Guilt Battle Arena, developed by Invincible Cat, published by Forward XP. It released February 14th on Xbox One, Steam, PS4 for $14.99. It is also coming to the Switch as well. Engage your friends and family in frantic couch multiplayer battles and co-op combat. As a member of the Guilt Patrol, you must battle the dreadful judge and his evil minions to bring peace back to the galaxy. Tell me about this one.
Yeah, so when
the giggles.
Yeah, when I first saw the preview video, I was kind of picturing like I was reminded of Move or Die. It's a kind of a similar couch platform type game. It's on Steam. I don't know if it's on console. And it's a series of different mini games, and one of them involves having each of you have some sort of a gun, and the bullet, after you fire it, you have to go retrieve it to reload, and you just try to be the last one standing out of up to four players. Very similar format. This game is actually like a minimalist version of that. So you don't really have any sort of platforms. You simply have an arena on which you can move left and right, and you're always moving. You either tap left and continue walking, or you tap right and continue walking, or you jump or you dash, and you can also double jump. And you can play it in a couple different ways. I tried out a co-op mode, and I also tried a versus mode. And the co-op mode has you fighting against waves of computer opponents, which are mostly not very intelligent. They just follow patterns, so it's almost like playing Frogger with them. You have to dodge their weapons, and you have to shoot them. that part's not like Frogger. I wish Frogger had a gun. That'd be kind of cool. But the versus mode is a little more that same, you know, couch move or die style, where you're going up against each other in a 2-to-4-player format, and you have that gun with one bullet. You have to go retrieve that bullet to reload, and you're shooting at each other, and or you're working obstacles or hazards into the mix while you play.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's like I said, it's a really minimalist version of that move or die, you know, type gameplay. So there's nothing, no like complex arena to move around in. There are no higher and lower elevations or platforms to jump on. You are quite seriously walking back and forth in a simple circle type arena, or not even a circle. It's more like a plane. It's all 2D, kind of like a fighting game, really.
It's Final Destination.
Sure.
Smash Brothers, Final Destination, Fox only, okay. No items.
There you go. Yeah, okay.
I'm guessing that they're going with the KISS method on this one to just keep it simple, yes. Stupid.
And it is remarkably challenging for being so simple, I gotta admit. It seems like it'd be a game that would adapt well to like a mobile platform too, because you could probably do the whole thing with touch commands and get it to work pretty well. But yeah, I mean, you basically have to evade each other by jumping or dashing while you try to shoot each other, or you try to play your enemy or your opponents into some of the obstacles out there. So like there's a chicken mode. I think this was our favorite, where you your bullet doesn't kill, but instead stun your opponent if you shoot them. But you have to stun them in the path of a chicken that falls from the sky and kills them. It's true. There's also
that sounds incredible.
It's awesome. There's also there are also rockets. There are cannons. And so you'll see like a targeting reticle that'll show where the cannonball is going to land. It tries to target you, then it fires and you have to get out of the way, or maybe hopefully it'll pop your opponent instead of you. Or rockets that'll be like a heat seeking type rocket. It'll follow you for a number of seconds. And if you can redirect it toward your opponent, you can blast them instead. Stuff like that. So very action-packed, but very simple, too.
Nice. We can't talk about this without quickly touching on the visuals. First time I saw this game, I thought it was from the Behemoth.
Yes, that's what I thought, too. Exactly.
I love the visual style. I've always loved the visuals in games from the Behemoth. For the people who don't know what that is, like Castle Crashers, Battle Block Theater. This gave me a very Behemoth-y vibe, if that's a word.
Yeah, very much so. It's a little, if you'll forgive the term, cleaner in the way it looks. Lines are a little sharper and more rigid than that more hand-drawn style of the Behemoth. But yes, it is very much a same sort of feel. Unfortunately, I got to say, it's not quite as detailed as Behemoth either. So like your death animation, you more or less just vaporize and you see a little slash go through you. So not as amusing as the Behemoth in that sense either, but in a way it makes it a little more, shall we say, kid friendly. You know,
which works because I know the Behemoth games, they could sometimes straddle that line between teen and M with how gory they could get. Even in the more cartoonish sense, they'll have like decapitations and stuff like that.
Yeah, they kind of toe the line of bad taste every once in a while, which for the right audience, that's great.
But, like pooping deer that you just ride.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. Classic. Or the pooping owl. Full disclosure, my kids and I love Castle Crashers, and that's still probably their favorite part of the game is going
nice. To forest. So, I mean, yeah. Everyone loves that part.
It's a classic. What can I say?
I'm curious. I know this is good for versus stuff and co-op play. Is there enough content for single players?
So you can do, here's an interesting bit. You can do co-op as a single player. You can do either one player or two player co-op, and it doesn't make sense to call it co-op, right? So if you do pick it up as a single player game, here's what's going to happen. You pick your arena and you are up against those waves. Like I said, you know, these pre-programmed enemies that just sort of go right to left or left to right, and they're, you know, carrying a giant buster sword, or they have like this staff and they're a bishop, or they have this big hammer, or they have guns pointed every which way and they shoot occasionally. And so that's the challenge. Stay alive as long as you can. You get your points by shooting them, and then you retrieve your bullet after you shoot it. You can shoot through more than one at a time if you aim and time it well. So yeah, there is a single player game there. And as you play and you accumulate a number of stars based on what score you finally achieve, you can start unlocking stuff too. There's a lot of characters to unlock. You start with, gosh, I want to say like they show four of them. On the cover art, but I want to say you actually start with like 10, and there's probably three times that, four times that you can still unlock. It's a lot of characters. So yeah, there is a single player game there. I could see it being a little monotonous. The real fun happens when you have other people to play with, for sure.
Nice. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. So I got to know, overall $15 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's probably a buy it. There are a couple things, like I said, that kind of aren't like perfect, but it is pretty damn good. If I had one complaint, it's that your jump is the same height regardless of whether you hold the jump button or you just tap it quickly, and that keeps throwing me. That presents an unwanted challenge in the game. Like, I think I'm not going to jump high enough to bump into an enemy weapon, and I do. But you know, that aside, really, it for $15, it's a great game. Absolutely.
Awesome. Sounds good. Sorry, I'm taking pictures of my cat rolling on the ground right now. I've never seen her roll like this before. That's how I keep myself busy on this show when other people talk. Oh, man. Anyway, Royal, thank you so much for coming on and chatting about these two games. Any final thoughts to sum it up?
Archipelago.
Next game to talk about is called Attack of the Earthlings, developed by Team Junkfish, published by Junkfish Limited. It released February 8th on Steam for $24.99. Take on Galactoil, a comically dysfunctional intergalactic energy corporation and its larger-than-life employees in a tactical stealth game that fuses satisfying strategic gameplay and dark comedy in a quirky single-player story. Covering this one, our good friend Tom Miller. Tom, how you doing?
Oh, everything is going just fine.
Going good?
Yeah.
How's the weather?
Oh, it's gorgeous. It is, well, it was snowing yesterday, and now it's like all sunny, and that's cool.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah, well...
Climate change is fake.
Yeah, it's a hoax, right?
Pretty much.
Because it's warm, or it's cold sometimes, so until it's just an unlivable inferno all the time, then everything is totally cool.
Until the Earth is engulfed by the sun. Hooray! Anyway, Attack of the Earthlings. Tell me about this one. This one looks crazy.
Yeah. So actually, it's a turn-based strategy game. As you mentioned, it uses it says it's a tactical stealth game, but it plays out. I'm gonna compare it to XCOM, but I've never actually played XCOM. I've only seen like videos of it, so it looks. But yeah, so you have your squad. It kind of flips the formula around though, because instead of trying to fend off an alien invasion, you are the aliens or the swarm who has had their planet invaded by the humans, and so they set up like this big oil company that's drilling into the surface of your planet, and your goal is to kill all of them and get them to get off of the planet. And so as you go through the game, you're making your way through different levels of this company's headquarters, starting out like with the drilling area, and then moving up through the different departments of it. So the gameplay is you're basically playing as like a matriarch who can like spawn different types of units, basically. So you start off just being able to use just like basic grunts, and then you can evolve them into different forms that can have like ranged attacks or different abilities, like being able to leave traps for the enemies, for the guards. And so at first I was looking at it, and it's like there's seven missions, and I was like, man, this is going to be really short. But then it turns out that each one of them is really involved, and you have a lot of different objectives that pop up as the mission goes on. So right, it turns
so,
out
so each yeah. mission is kind of like its own big ass campaign chapter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice.
Yeah. And overall, like I have found this game to be really enjoyable. The sense of humor in it is great. It kind of caught me off guard because, it starts off, well, like you don't really know what to expect, but then there are some really good comedic beats. The writing is really clever, and you have like the pissed off, like higher up who's like, telling the security teams to come and get you, but he's always like making jokes and stuff. So it's good to, I don't know. It's because the game itself has like a pretty like drab aesthetic overall, but it mixes it together with that humor and some like weird character designs and stuff. They're all very cartoony and stuff. I did enjoy it though.
Nice.
I thought it was a really nice mix of tactics with like a dark sci-fi story with just kind of like weird ass humor sometimes.
Plus, it's always good to be the bad guy in a game.
Oh, yeah. And
instead of being taken out by the aliens, you are the aliens doing the taken out.
And you can kind of argue that you're not really being the bad guy because you're having your planet destroyed. So.
Very true.
So there you go. The humans are the true enemy. the most evil of all creatures is man.
Very true. My question for you is, I know that you said that there's only seven missions, but they are fairly long missions. Does it make the $25 price tag worth it?
You know, I think so. I feel like there's enough going on, and also it's a pretty challenging game as well. You really need to plot out your moves, so it has a lot of depth to it, and I think fans of turn-based strategy will definitely get their money's worth out of it.
Nice. So your official verdict for the game?
I'd say a try it there.
Sounds good. Well, Tom, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about this. Any final thoughts to sum up Attack of the Earthlings?
Just that whole like performance review thing cracked me up, and I'm not going to say any more, but there's, yeah, that is all.
All right, next game to talk about is called World of Mixed Martial Arts 5, developed and published by Grey Dog Software, released February 1st for $34.95 exclusively on the Grey Dog Software website. World of Mixed Martial Arts 5 is the latest MMA release by developer Adam Ryland and represents the largest and most powerful game in the series. In WMMA 5, you run your own MMA organization in a lively, vivid, competitive game world that evolves over time. Checking this one out, Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, you know, just not sleeping much because I'm trying to get every and any game in I can, you know, life. How about yourself?
Ugh, I am under the weather because of the insane weather. And it is like...
goes like 30 degrees and then 70 degrees and 30 degrees, 70 degrees.
Yeah, it's supposed supposed to be 70 in like a day. It's going to be 70 degrees. And then the day after, it's going to be mid-30s.
And people wonder why the flu is so prevalent right now.
Yeah, seriously. Fuck, whatever. So, World of Mixed Martial Arts 5, we should probably get this out there right now. You weren't supposed to review this. This was supposed to go to someone else, and then they decided that they were going to just change their mind, and you were awesome enough to step up and check this one out. So, I know this isn't normally your wheelhouse, but what is World of MMA 5?
Well, World of MMA 5 is pretty much a sim of managing a MMA company, either as the owner or the CEO of the company, or just as a person who doesn't want to manage anything and just want to watch the game play out. So the way it works is you start the game off and you choose an avatar, and the avatar has a number of different like talents that they can have related to negotiations, an eye for talent, matchmaking, promotion, scouting, and silver tongue, all of which would come into play in the event that you're trying to sweet talk people to join your company, for example, or to promote your company. In addition to that, you can choose whether or not you want to be an exclusive contract under a company, which I'm honestly not sure what if it matters or not, though my understanding or my belief would be that if you are exclusive to a company, you can't, you know, go and like work between multiple companies at a time or anything like that. Like you're stuck with this specific organization for management, or yeah, you can just be a free agent too. But you essentially choose this character and you set up his perks. And then you have to go about selecting a company which you want to work under once you've done that. And each company has a roster of players or wrestlers that fall under all the pretty much the different weight classes you'd expect. There's bantamweight, lightweight, and featherweight. And all these people are who you're going to be managing throughout the game as far as like, well, these people and whoever you decide you want to hire, now I was mentioning. So what ends up happening is when you start the game, it starts out on a kind of specific calendar date, and you are essentially doing management work. You go to do like research on the something called the Blurcat website, and that website gives you a ridiculous cornucopia of information. There's access to like different news articles that will pop up daily, which will tell you upcoming matches between other bout members. It'll tell you about if companies are making offers to other people, and you can kind of try to step on their shoes and counter offer to get that person from them if you want to try. And it honestly is all kinds of like if you want a talk show or anything like that. Just everything that is happening in the MMA world shows up on this site, and you have to utilize it to best make plans for how you want to handle business in the company.
Interesting. So if people are going into this expecting an MMA fighting game, they're kind of getting the wrong thing, huh?
Yeah, there is no MMA fighting in this game unless you want to read about it. this game is pretty much a Visual C compiled game that is all information. Like there's still image, tons of stats and details on every fighter that the guy designed has put this in the game. Stats and information across the board, out the wazoo. But the downside is that from what I've experienced with this game, for everything that it has, it lacks any sort of glitz or glimmer, if that makes any sense. Like it's lacking a thing there. And without that, it doesn't, it's the equivalent of like, you know, if you were playing SimCity with no music, no animations, it was just, here's a still image of a building, you know, it's missing something.
Yeah.
It's hard to convey what that is, but I mean, from what I came to expect from the game, it gave me tons to do as far as like rosters and making decisions go. The game doesn't even ever end. There's no winning condition. It's just essentially play until you're bored or you're tired of the game, or you've accomplished everything you want to accomplish, because it's essentially just a lot of crap that you do, a lot of stuff. You can actually go about the business of setting up promotions for your company, and promotions work will increase things like your credibility and stability. Let's say, for example, you got some bad publicity over the course of the game, and you want to actually attempt to remedy that. You can go out and do like some charity work for your people, or some for like charity work, or you can like interviews on TV. Let me see. I wrote it down here too. Get public relations, so you get your PR team on it. That cleans you up. You can do like buy like an actual building to build reputation for your company too. Like, hey, we're a stable organization. We're located right here, as opposed to just being like a fly by night locale or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like, there's just a lot of crap going on in this game.
It sounds like the nichest of the niche kind of management sim out there.
Yes, it pretty much is. Like, if you want to read information, you'll have it here, because it gives you tons to do to manage that. I mean, it has, the guy created, set it up so that it actually has a regular tick of the top wrestlers in the organization across the weight classes, across the genders. And it constantly rotates and shifts as the game progresses. You can pretty much, if you're a owner, but not the CEO, or sorry, if you're a CEO, but not the owner, you can get fired from the company for doing a poor job of managing the company.
It's realistic in that aspect that if you're fucking up as the guy in charge, they'll get rid of you.
Yeah, like he did a lot with this game as far as like managing stat information and things like that. It's just,
the presentation is lacking.
Yeah, it's very lacking. I could not quite feel myself getting absorbed to it. But I admit, I can wager if someone was really into MMA and they just want that, they want to see how it works behind the scenes in a sense. I mean, the guy's up to number 5, so I'm sure there's people that are out there like that. This is probably what they'd want. But if you're more of a person who just wants to have MMA matches, pick a guy and throw down, probably not for you.
Yeah, might be worth checking out the new EA UFC game that came out if you're looking to actually beat people up. But for the people who are into the stat management and into the whole behind the scenes aspect, if you're an aspiring Dana White, what do you think for $35 on this one?
If you're a stat monger and you're really into MMA, it's definitely, I can see it as being a try at least. But if you don't fit that mold, it's likely a deny because the cost is high, which makes it a high risk of expectation for enjoyment.
No.
But I also don't think that would be necessarily a disappointing review, because it pretty much works in a way that I'm almost positive this guy built it knowing that he had a very niche audience in mind.
Yeah, I would assume that there's a subset of like hardcore World of MMA fans out there who this is what the game is made for. They're the group that this game is designed for. So
exactly. So in that regard, I think they'd be happy with it for sure.
Cool. Well, next game is called Tiles, developed by Romans I-16 Gaming. I think that's how they want it, or IXVI Gaming. I'm going with Roman numerals there. So Roman 116 maybe Gaming, published by The Hidden Levels, released February 20th on Xbox One and PS4 for $3.99. Tiles is a fast-paced action puzzle Tiles is a fast-paced action puzzle game that will both convolute your mind and burn your fingertips. Yay, words. Dark Mika covered this one, and she wrote in her review, and let's see what she has to say. Tiles is a little puzzle game where you move a square over tiles. Moving over blue tiles makes them fall away. You have to make all the blue tiles fall away and reach the red one, which is the end point. Puzzles start off easy, then get punishingly hard. Hard part isn't always just figuring out how to beat the level, but instead pushing the buttons on the controller fast enough to actually get through the areas before the blue tiles fall. Charmingly simple, but you will put yourself through hell to beat this. There's 90 levels to complete in the game. For those who excel at it, there's also times that you can beat to add to the difficulty. Visually and mechanically, fairly simple, so even kids could play the game fairly easily. If you want to be cruel, you could use this as punishment. Tell your kids they can't do whatever until they beat the game. Good luck to them ever beating it. There's a small issue with me with the game. It strains both your fingers because of the speed you're trying to tap things, and your eyes because you're trying not to fall off while going at those high speeds. For $4 on Xbox One and PS4, I think it's worth it. It's a simple little puzzle game that's deceptively hard, something everyone in the family can try their hand out. even as co-op mode, and that's versus for each level. Whoever beats it first gets the win. At the very least, it's a fuck it, why not? You'll get at least 5 hours out of the game, significantly more if you're trying to seriously beat it 100%. I put time into it myself as well, and I got to stand behind this one. For $4, it is awesome. She mentioned the co-op and then the local stuff. There's actually a level builder in the game as well. So you could create, really? Yeah, you could create your own levels, your own designs. If you get the game, search for SML, because I made an SML stage. It's literally just the letters SML, but I'm proud of it. And yeah, you can upload your own stages, share them with the world. You can play various stages that other people have created and enjoy those. So it's near endless replayability as long as people are still making stages, which I think is, you know, it'll happen. There's people out there who just love making more unique, crazy stages, and there's some good shit on there. And obviously, we went through this with Infinite Mini Golf. There's an achievement for sharing a stage, which means we're going to get a bunch of shitty, awful, just a straight line stage. I think Carnage even made a stage that was literally a start, one blue tile, and the end.
It would be nice if they designed it in a way where it could be a stage, but there has to be a certain amount of components, something to indicate that you put some modicum of effort into doing something with it.
Yeah, which it's a bummer because, you know, I love when games have level editors in them. I love when they encourage people to use their imagination and creativity and create more stuff that gamers can enjoy. But it, you know, when you attach achievements to it, it just seems to ruin like any potential of good stages being plentiful because there's just a flood of awful. Like I've seen so many that are just a gigantic square of tiles that takes you multiple minutes to just go across all of them and hit an end. I fucking hate that people do that. I didn't see anything to report stages. So I would love to see a way to report low effort, awful stages like this to just get them out of rotation. Or, you know, if someone makes a giant dick, which I'm sure someone is going to do, it would be good to report that so that kids don't have to look at dick stages.
Or maybe you'll look at dick stages, but then you'll tell them it's actually a balloon.
Yeah, maybe. But there's already creative people. I already saw a Mario stage. Like pixel art Mario. It was amazing that people make these.
So now we're talking. See, that's the good stuff.
And then you have just a line. Why? But yeah, $4. $4. I absolutely agree that this is worth picking up. It is super cheap. It is super fun, super easy. I know Dark Mika had issues with it. I'm sure Cole Martin would have problems as well with her arthritis because it, you know, there a lot of precision is required in maneuvering some of these stages. But yeah, overall, $4. Yeah, definitely grab it. But one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Slime Son Sheeple Sequel, developed by Fabraz, published by Head Up Games. This one released February 5th on Steam for $3.99 as a standalone game. Or if you already own Slime Son, it is a free update to owners. Your game will just update to it to include it. Sheeple's finally lost it. He is convinced that everything's just part of a giant video game and that he was coded to simply be a side character, which is why he decided to recode himself to become the villain instead. Can you defeat his nefarious levels and come out unscathed? Purnell, did you?
Nope. This game is mean, and I mean that in the most not sincere way. This game is really mean. There's been like a big trend of like, you know, difficult platforms. We had the Meat Boys. We had, I guess talking about Meat Boys typically, but I noticed there's a bunch of them generally. And as far as I'm concerned, this is more on par with I Want to Be the Guy as far as like how mean the game is. There are levels where you can't see the map at all and you have to rely on covering the map with slime and where to even know where platforms are, which means that you're going to die a lot. A lot of frustrating deaths. But anyway, the game is you are a slime who is made to traverse one of, I'd say in the case of the slime, like, say, 7 levels, each level having about 3 or 4 stages within it. And the goal here is just to get from point A to point B, but it's done in a way that's just completely cruel to people. So there's a timer at the top of the screen, and it ticks down pretty damn fast. And the moment it hits zero, the screen starts to fill with, I guess in the original game it was bile. So in this game, I don't know what it is, just code or something. But originally you were inside of a monster's stomach, so you were being chased by a stomach acid. But yeah, you end up getting chased by this stuff. So you're basically constantly racing against it to get away before the auto screen kills you. But in addition to that, you got the obstacles I mentioned before, like the map not existing. So you have to kind of slime it and die a lot. There's anti-gravity chambers. There is water stages, which I didn't even expect to see in this game. And the means of which you get to traverse them are pretty much just slime. You can run. You can jump. You can morph. And when you morph, you kind of go from being green to translucent. And that allows you to slow down time for some reason. And it also allows you to pass through certain green blocks. And then when you phase back in, of course, you stop on the green blocks. You can wall climb by sliming, grabbing, and doubling wall jumping off of them. And you can do like a weird dash, which is just hitting the dash button to dash. And you can do like a dashing jump. So these are the only tools you pretty much have at your disposal to play this insanely brutal game. But at the very beginning of the game, they say the second stage, they introduce two friends who may or may not have been in the prequel game. So forgive me if they were. But there's a marble, and there's this guy like this red ferret slimy thing. And they both play completely differently. So the slime guy is, what was it? The slime guy is essentially like the red slime thing. He can change color. He goes from red to green and back. So there are red blocks in the game that can kill slime son. But in the case of this guy, he can go through the red block just as slime son can go through the green block. In addition to that, he can also do his normal dash and stuff like that. So it's just, it's rough, man. It's just mean. Marble son can essentially just roll on the ground a lot. He just rolls. And he can do like a dashing roll, but I think it's kind of funny that he gets this dashing roll and it is damn near impossible to pull it off at the right time. Cause this is the very first level you use him on. You jump down a narrow pit, and when you land, a cart rolls over you and kills you. So what you do is you are supposed to immediately dash out, but the timing almost never works properly. So I died like maybe 35 times before it actually freaking worked. And then after that, I got at the area below that before finishing the map, so to do it again. It's just a mean freaking game. But you can also do a lot of weird side stuff on addition to that. There's these bugs you can collect in the game. They're always hitting. There's one hidden in every stage, typically. And you can use those bugs to buy a lot of extra stuff, like screen art for some reason, like art that has nothing to do with the game. It's just cool art. There's music you can buy, which also I'm not even sure if the music is all in the game. It's just cool music. There's like a weird music mini game where you're catching notes that are falling from the sky and you have to catch them using a specific maneuver to succeed. It's just a lot of features in that regard. It's just in order to utilize those features and play the game, you have to deal with all the insanity platforming hoobhob that exists there. And it's funny because when I first started playing the game, I was ready to dislike it because there's a lot of busy, it's a very busy screen with small text and just like, it's hard to explain that weird like 8-bit art style that's also kind of grungy.
Yeah. Yeah, Slime Son definitely has a very unique art style. I know we covered the original release on the show, we covered the Switch version of the show, so it's definitely a unique art style. I enjoy it. I think it looks really, really cool.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it looks bad. I'm saying it's very busy.
Yeah.
In a sense that if you're trying to read certain stuff, it might be hard to read the text, for example, stuff like that. But the game is, what I realized as I was playing, I was actually kind of addicted to it. Like, I wanted to beat the next level. I sat there on those levels with the invisible freaking platforms, and I pulled them off. I made it work. It was nuts. So
it sounds like this is definitely something that is meant for people who played the original, beat the original, and want more and more challenge.
Yeah, I would go with that for sure. The game has an audience. In a sense, even I'm a part of that audience because, like I said, I like challenging platformers and puzzlers, and that's right up my alley. It's just this game felt especially brutal in that regard because of all the ones I've ever played, I've never played one where the entire freaking map was invisible. It's at all a brand new level. What the fuck is it? But I think it fits the mold. How much is it selling for again?
If you get it as a standalone game, because they're selling it, you know, if it's the original Slime Sun is $15 and includes all the updates and DLC. The Just Sheeple sequel standalone by itself is $4.
I'm not going to lie. I want to say if you're going to buy the game, buy Slime Sun first. Like, don't go right to Sheeple sequel. I'll say that right now because I feel like I haven't gotten to do much with Slime Sun aside from my friend's Switch copy, but I feel like Sheeple sequel was kind of designed like, so you need harder levels? Well, here you go, bitch. So play the earlier game first, get the ramp up, and if you find yourself enjoying that, then I think you'll enjoy Sheeple sequel too.
Nice. But, so let's handle this multiple ways. If you already own Slime Sun, you already have it, so it's worth playing, right?
Yes.
Now, the second thing, if you haven't played Slime Sun, you think it's better to go with the $15, just get everything together and play the original Slime Sun stuff first so you could get used to the mechanics.
Yes.
Over the $4, just the sequel.
I definitely feel it's better to get the full game instead of just the sequel.
Plus, you're getting more game, too. More content.
That is very true.
Good stuff. I think,
and honestly, even if the game doesn't quite suit you, the music is gold in that thing. The music is pretty freaking sweet. I like it a lot.
And if you have the game on Steam already, you could grab the soundtrack for $8. Or if you don't have anything yet, the game's $15, the soundtrack is $8. Or you could just get the deluxe edition with the game and the soundtrack for $18.
Oh, so you can actually, yes, he did make it available to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, there you go.
There you go. Save some money, setup. Get some awesome music and awesome game and good stuff.
Yeah, boy.
So now, of course, now I got to itch for more brutal platformers. I don't know what the hell I'm thinking, but I have a taste for more. It's in my system right now.
Nice. Oh, man. Well, Purnell, thank you so much for coming on and chatting about these games. That is it for tonight's show. Thanks again to everyone for dropping by and hanging out and chatting with me. Purnell, do you have any final words to end the show?
I don't know. Slime Sun, challenge yourself, brutalize yourself, make yourself acknowledge that terrible games do exist, but great games on the cost of frustration are worth it if you want that challenge. I don't know. It's been a long day. It's been a long freaking day.
Oil been a long weekend day. Too, and a long week. Like, it's 2018 feels so long so far.
It does. I don't understand. Don't understand. But hopefully, as the weather clears up, things will feel better, and it will just genuinely be better.
Nice. So. Well, Purnell, enjoy the weather over the coming days. Go swimming tomorrow and then bundle up for the day after.
Don't catch the flu because it's coming for you.